In Birmingham draws to a close today after David Cameron, the Prime Minister, gave his keynote speech in which he announced some key policy announcements, key tax cuts in particular. Let's talk to Michael Gove, who's the Tory Chief Whip. Thank you very much for joining us, Michael.
It's an absolute pleasure, Julia. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, sir. Now, I'd love to actually get to a couple of education matters, but first of all, let's talk about the key announcements we've heard from David Cameron, the things that are going to be the front page headlines tomorrow. Two major tax cuts, the tax-free personal allowance up to £12,500, taking £1 million more people out of tax altogether, and the 40p threshold raised to £50,000. Where is this money coming from?
It'll be coming from reductions in public spending, making sure that we continue to bear down not just on the cost of benefits, but also the cost of other government departments.
Well, the trouble is, we are in times of austerity, and whenever Labour Party pledge any sort of cuts or any issues like that, you guys come down very hard on them, saying, well, where's the money coming from? But it seems to me that there are with a massive deficit to pay down, a massive debt, tax cuts are probably not the way forward, are they?
Well, over the course of the last 4 years, we've been able to both reduce the size of deficits and cut taxes for hardworking people. So we've shown that we can deliver in both areas in this Parliament. We hope that in the course of the next bond, if there's a Conservative government, that we'll be given the opportunity to carry on with that work.
Now, of course, this is very good news for people who found themselves paying the higher rate of tax at 40p when they're earning in the 40,000s, don't consider themselves, particularly many in London and the South East, to be high earners, and for those people who are on minimum wage. However, many of the working poor are going to be hit very hard at the slightly poorer end when they see their benefits, their working tax credit and the like, frozen for a couple of years. You are sort of giving to people on the £45,000 and taking away from people earning less than £10,000. It's a strange way to go around running a country, isn't it?
No. I think the first thing to bear in mind is that the freeze in benefits covers the first couple of years of the next Parliament. And the tax cuts that we're going to bring in are going to be brought in over the course of the whole Parliament. And many of those who will, yes, of course, face a freeze in, for example, tax credits, will actually also see their tax bill reduce overall. And so for the overwhelming majority of people, the net sort of effect of all of these changes will be to enable them to keep more of their own money, to be more prosperous.
Now, the UKIP leader, Nigel Farage, has already complained that you've stolen his tax policies. Given all the defections to UKIP in recent days and weeks, are you frit?
I didn't know that UKIP had any tax policies, and I'm surprised that Nigel knows what his own party's policies are, because he claimed not to have read his manifesto at the last election. No, is the short answer.
Is tax going to be the fighting ground for the general election, though? Because the Labour Party were of the view that it was going to be the NHS, on which you really don't have very strong trust from the general public.
Well, I think that then the next general election will be fought on the basis of a series of choices. The ultimate choice is over who you believe has the qualities required in order to see the job through as Prime Minister. And we believe that it would be a risk if he were to have Ed Miliband in power. I don't think that he's shown during his period in nominal charge of the Labour Party anything like the grit and the determination and the authority that you need in order to deal with all the challenges that being Prime Minister throws at you. More than that, I think overall in the economy, reducing tax is part of our long-term economic plan, which has already seen the economy grow faster, more jobs created. It will also be the case that we hope to get more people onto the housing ladder with a home of their own. We hope to eliminate youth unemployment by getting more people into apprenticeships and then into satisfying jobs. We will also be improving public services, and that's both schools and hospitals.
Ed Miliband and Labour have pointed out that more cash for the NHS, ring-fencing the NHS budget, will effectively mean more cuts in other departments. Where are those cuts going to come? In your old Department of Education, for instance?
We'll be seeing more about where other spending reductions will come over the next few months.
Yes, but we are nevertheless going to categorically see cuts in other spending departments, aren't we?
Well, there will be cuts in other departments. The one thing the Prime Minister spelled out today is that as a personal priority, he's going to make sure that NHS spending is protected. As to which other areas have which guarantees, you'll have to wait for the Chancellor and the Prime Minister to spell out that detail.
What other areas of spending would you like to see protected?
Well, mercifully, those decisions aren't mine. They are the Chancellor's and the Prime Minister's. And the reason why I say mercifully is that they're the people who've proven that they've got the judgment and the steel to be able to make those decisions appropriately. And so, from my point of view, I'm very, very happy to leave that judgment to the Prime Minister and the Chancellor, because they've shown that when they've exercised that judgment in the past, they've got it right.
You recently said in an interviewer that when asked who is the person you can't say no to, you said David Cameron. Have you never said no to the Prime Minister?
I can't say no to David Cameron, no.
Why not?
He's the Prime Minister. I serve in his cabinet. It's an amazing privilege to be a Member of Parliament. It's an even more amazing privilege to be a government minister. The person who persuaded me to become a Member of Parliament was David Cameron, and the person who appointed me as a government minister was David Cameron. And for that reason, I owe him an enormous amount. And for that reason, I couldn't say no more than that. I've also had the privilege of seeing David over the course of the last 4 years take some incredibly difficult decisions and remain same, generous-hearted, good-humoured, sane, sensible a person that I've known for many years, as well as being a great father and husband.
Goodness me, this is tantamount to a love letter, Michael.
Well, all I can say is I think we're very lucky to have him as Prime Minister, and it's a privilege to be in the same team as him.
But we have cabinet responsibility, not a presidential system of government in this country. You say it's a privilege to be in the cabinet. Is there not also a responsibility? If you think that he's doing the wrong thing, do you not say, actually, David, I think that's wrong?
We do have all sorts of discussions in the cabinet, and are both around the cabinet table and when other ministers meet. And I'll always explain what my views are, but ultimately, it's the Prime Minister who has to make the decision. The ultimate responsibility is his. And what he's owed from his colleagues, myself included, is the freedom to be able to make that ultimate decision and the knowledge that we will stick by it and that we will be loyal to him, that decision having been made.
Of course, during the summer, he took the decision to move you from a job that you've absolutely loved, the education remit, handed it to Nicky Morgan. Do you miss that job?
It was a wrench to move, but actually I found the new job that I'm doing has been compelling. It's been exciting. It's been fascinating. And I've had the chance to contribute in lots of different ways across government. Because the job is generally a little less in the limelight than some other government jobs, in some respects, it's actually been a relief.
And are you friends with Theresa May again? It's now viewed that you had a little bit of a battle with her over various issues involving the Trojan horse investigations into Birmingham schools, and that she won.
I think Theresa's fantastic. I think she's a brilliant Home Secretary. I think she's been the toughest Home Secretary when dealing with extremism and terrorism that we've had in this country. And I think she's doing a brilliant job. And funnily enough, on the Trojan horse issue, the person who, Prime Minister aside, has given me the most consistent support helping to implement the detail of dealing with the problem that we face in Birmingham was Theresa.
In terms of your successor, Nicky Morgan, she spoke about you, mentioned you in her speech yesterday. In fact, you got a rousing ovation from the Tory party faithful, longer than indeed than more forceful than she received herself at the end of her speech. But she's had to, I suppose, make up for some of the things that you've done. She's trying to win teachers back after you. You basically made a lot of enemies among teaching unions over the last few years. She's talking about teachers being heroes and how we need to value them. Why do you think teachers and so many teaching unions didn't like what you did and didn't like your style?
I don't know, in a way. I can speculate, but you really have to ask them, I suppose. I always took the trouble, whenever I had the chance to do so, to stress that we have the best generation of teachers and head teachers ever in our schools. And I thought Nicky put it even better when she said, Labour wants our teachers to be world-class. Our teachers are world-class. Sometimes we don't praise people who are public servants often enough. I think it was great that Nicky did so in a way that was memorable and true.
Let's turn to one other issue that was brought up by the Prime Minister today, the new British Bill of Rights and scrapping the Human Rights Act. What will that mean for ordinary people?
It means that we won't have the sort of nonsense that we've had in the past where Strasbourg judges tell us that, for example, prisoners have to have the vote when our Parliament says, actually, sorry, no.
Is that a vote winner?
I don't know. I just think it's the right thing to do.
Because Lord Ashcroft, who was, of course, Tory party treasurer, he's done some polling and it's been made very clear that you are behind Labour in the key marginal polls. You're behind in the marginal constituencies, you're behind in the general opinion polls. Right now, as it stands right now, Labour are set to win the next general election, either outright or in a coalition, perhaps with the Liberal Democrats. What are you going to have to do by next May, 7 months and a few days, to actually win voters back?
I think remind them at every opportunity that the next election is a straightforward choice. And the choice is between David Cameron and Ed Miliband. It's not between your ideal prime minister and the existing prime minister. It's between two competing visions. Ultimately, we have to choose between those visions and between two individuals who have, in one case, experience, resolution, strength, and in the other case, inexperience, irresolution, weakness. And if people want a strong leader and they want to continue on the road to recovery that we've set down, then they'll have to vote for David Cameron. And I will make that case wherever and whenever I can until the general election.
Michael Gove, thank you for joining us. Very much appreciate your time.
No, not at all. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you. He's the Tory chief whip. Sorry for the background noise there, obviously speaking to us live from Birmingham, where the Tories are